Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. The way things work here at the Pre-Post is that you will first hear our discussion of the trailer for Kubo and the Two Strings. We've recorded this before we've seen the film itself, so it'll be spoiler-free. We kind of just chat about the trailer and what our expectations are for the final film that we will see. Then we'll jump forward and you'll hear the review of the full film once we've seen it, obviously. This part of the podcast will be chock full of spoilers, so don't listen to the second part unless you've seen the film. Yeah, and we just basically delve right in and review the film in its entirety. Here is our trailer impressions for Kubo and the Two Strings.
My name is Kubo. I look after my mother mostly. What was father like?
He was just like you. Strong and so handsome.
Ugh, mother. I use magic to tell stories.
If you must blink, do it now.
About epic battles, warriors and monsters. But I had no idea my stories were actually true.
Kubo.
We've been looking for you for so long.
Mother!
Kubo, you must find your father's armor. It's your only chance.
Mother! Kubo!
Alright, so we've just watched the trailer for the new Leica film, Kubo and the Two Strings. I think we're both sort of fans of Leica in general, even though Box Trolls was probably our first sort of disagreement on the podcast.
Yeah, probably the only one.
Yeah, exactly. But in general, we're Leica fans. So I'm curious to hear, John, what you think their new film will be like based on this trailer we just watched.
Yeah, I think I'm really quite excited for this. As you said, we're Leica fans, and I really Leica what they represent in the animation industry. You're going to spit out your drink there. They're always very original and in concept and in animation style. They're still doing stop motion, although it's so good now that it looks CG a lot of the time. I love those guys so much, and I'm really excited for this. I think it's cool. It kind of looks like, I feel like it looks a little bit like Avatar The Last Airbender, which was a show I really liked.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, for this sort of quote-unquote kids show, it's awesome. And it's similar in the sense that it's Japanese Eastern influence, but it's an American made TV show. I miss Leica are an American studio, as far as I know.
Yeah. From Portland.
Yes, that's right. I'm really excited. I think it looks like it's going to have some really exciting action, some great sort of mythological stuff. And it looks incredible. Like the design and everything looks awesome. So I'm super pumped for this, actually. I feel like, you know, every time these guys have a movie coming out, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And this looks pretty epic.
You know? Definitely. I agree. I guess the biggest thing the biggest thing we disagreed on in terms of the Box Trolls, and I feel like even after our disagreement on the Box Trolls and I was a little bit more negative than you, is I still came out on a positive note on that film. And just what Leica represent for the industry is so fucking cool and so important. Like you said, just having a new film from them is such a big deal. And yeah, I'm super excited. Having said that, I think the biggest discrepancy for us for Box Trolls was the humor, and I think that is the same thing in this trailer. The weakest parts of the trailer are the humor beats, I think, and I'm a little bit worried that they focus too much on that. Because other than that, I'm 100% on board with you. Like, the epic nature of it looks incredible. The stop motion animation looks incredible. And, like, more importantly, is just the originalness of it. You know, like, the Eastern influence, the fact that it feels just like a new story. It's not a sequel, a remake, or a adaptation. It's just this this new thing that we kind of haven't seen before. And just having an action-y kind of stop motion film, that's kind of rare. And I feel like this is kind of like sort of swinging back to Paranorman. Like, Box Trolls is a bit more sort of British and sort of jokey and kiddie in a way, whereas Paranorman I felt was not action-y, but it was a bit more grand, and it was a little bit more mature. And I loved that. And I feel like this is kind of a swing back to that sense, but with like an Eastern tinge and on a bit more of an epic scale. Like, some of it looks scary. Like, it looks pretty...
Yeah, it does. It looks quite dark.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't look... And yeah, sorry to interrupt. I agree about the humour. And the humour looks sort of weird in the trailer, because all the other shots are like quite serious or epic, you know, and it's like dramatic. And then it's like these sort of almost typical animation jokes that just fall a bit flat.
But I don't know. I mean, overall, very excited. Much more so than Box Trolls, I think. Like, this looks right up my alley. So, super, super excited. Fingers crossed that lives up to our expectations.
Who are you?
Your family is very powerful. Your mother used her magic to save you and bring me to life. I'm here to protect you, Kubo. And that means you have to do as I say. Don't mess with the monkey.
Have you seen this crest before?
Of course.
This is a miracle.
I have found the son of my master. Your quest is now my quest too.
We don't know anything about you.
Firing an arrow is hardly what I'd call impressive.
Literally the first time I've ever done it.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us here in the town square. Don't blink, or whatever he says.
Just don't, as you're listening to the podcast, don't blink at all.
Yeah, don't blink. We want to give you a test and see how long you can keep those wet eyes open for. Matt's got his origami ready, and I've got my little banjo thing. And we're going to tell you a story about Kubo and the Two Strings, the new Leica film. And the story we're going to tell is what we thought of it. That's the story. What do you think?
That sounds amazing. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, let's hear your thoughts first, Matt, on Kubo and the Two Strings. I think we were pretty pumped for this
one. Yeah, like always, I think, like we discussed in the trailer, just having a Leica film is an exciting event. Like, it only happens every few years. And just having a stop-motion film, like, when does that happen anymore? Never.
Yeah.
Apart from Leica, right?
Except for these guys.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's just super exciting to begin with. And just in general, I guess my track record, we probably covered this in the Box Trolls review, but I think I've pretty much liked everything they've done. Box Trolls is probably my least favourite. And to be fair, I probably need to rewatch Coraline, because it's been a little while. But I remember loving that, and I loved Paranorman. So expectations are pretty high. And having seen Kubo, I would probably, I'm unsure, but it might be my favourite of their films so far. Really, really liked it. I do have like a couple of minor nitpicks. I think, as we discussed in the trailer, the humour is the weakest link in the Leica chain, because their storytelling is in general quite good, but I think that, I don't know, maybe it's a studio thing, or they feel like they need to appeal to a certain part of the audience, and they sort of shoehorn in these gags that I think for the most part don't work. They're not horrible, but they kind of feel a bit clunky and bring everything to a bit of a Holt. And I did kind of question some of the internal logic, particularly at the beginning of the film, but a lot of that sort of played itself out throughout the film and kind of made sense by the end. So I had less of an issue than I did at the beginning, but there's still a few things that didn't quite gel for me. But overall, I had a great time, and as we sort of predicted from the trailer, it's just this epic kind of action-y film that you just don't see in stop motion. Like, it's so impressive, the stuff that they pulled off here, the fluidity of the movement and the action set pieces. And I kind of, from what I understand, having read some stuff prior to seeing the film, is that some of it is CG aided, and they've kind of glossed over some of the clunkiness of stop motion to make it seem more action-y. But I think for the most part, it's still the mechanics of the stop motion is still there. And it's just so impressive. I guess maybe a minor criticism would be, I wish sometimes you could feel the CGI in some of the backgrounds, and I wish they hadn't had that in there. I wish they'd stuck 100% to stop motion, because it's so impressive. But yeah, overall, I really, really loved it. And I think it has a good message. I think it's it's got sort of a melancholy sadness to it that a lot of, quote-unquote kids' films aren't, aren't willing to tackle. And it sort of goes in directions that most films like this don't dare to, which is really cool. And yeah, just the originality of it all. The Eastern setting and the story that feels familiar enough but new and original in most of its aspects was super refreshing. I had an awesome time. But what about you? How does this rank for you in your Leica film lists?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely up there for me. I'm not sure if it's at the top or not.
What would be your number one, out of curiosity?
I really, really like Coraline a lot, I think.
I remember loving that when I saw it, but I haven't seen it since I saw it in the cinema.
I've seen it maybe once or twice since the cinema release. I have it on DVD. I still haven't seen it for years, but I did watch it since. And I just think that's a pretty perfect little film, almost horror film, sort of, family friendly horror film.
It's like Tim Burton-esque in the best possible way, not in a derogatory way.
Exactly. So that could still be at the top, but this would be close, man. I think particularly the first half of this movie, I was just in love.
Interesting, because I was almost the opposite to that. I grew to love. I was resisting some stuff at the beginning. Anyway.
We'll get into that. I was just, amazed by the production of it to begin with. I mean, it just looks so gorgeous, good, right? So beautiful. I want prints of some of these shots to hang up around my house. It just, I want it, and, it's that thing too of early on with the village and the forest. It's like, I want to go there. I just want to walk around there. It just looks so, it's just so well crafted and made. I want to live in that world.
The weird thing is, right, compared to a CGI world, the tactileness of it makes it almost feel like you could in a weird way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Even not live there, but touch it and make it. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, yeah, and that's a whole, that's a really good point, because, you see CG films or whatever, and it's oh, that looks really nice. And sometimes you do think oh, that's a great location. I'd love to be somewhere like that. But it's different here. It is that tactile feeling, because you're looking at real light and real texture. It's not a texture. It is just texture. If that makes sense. It's not a bitmap or whatever. So just on an aesthetic level, to begin with, I was this is, one of the best looking things I've ever seen. It just floored me how gorgeous this movie is. And all the story stuff I really loved. And I really love. But the setup, I enjoyed the setup and being introduced to the world and that sort of darkness and sadness, which is there from straight away, you know. And then you have this sort of prologue, and then the titles, and then he's just looking after his mother and stuff. And it's like pretty full on for a kid's film, you know, to be looking after this sort of slightly catatonic mum. I enjoyed all that, and I enjoyed the stuff in the village and the setup, and I don't want to get too specific too quickly, but I do feel it got slightly muddied a bit as it went on with, in terms of like who could do what and what did the magic mean and all that stuff. It just got a bit too much, and I think there's one too many, and I know the movie's about stories and our, you know, our memories and stories are how we sort of live on. But there are, I think, too many like, well, actually, this is what happened. And then they go into talking about someone's backstory, or they're fighting and they're talking about their backstory at the same time. That happened a lot. But overall, I loved it, and I got emotional during it, and I thought the score was amazing. And it was just a beautiful film in every way. I thought it was really, really amazing.
Great. Oh, yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page for the most part. I mean, I find it interesting that you felt the first part, first third or first half or whatever was more gelled better for you in terms of the logic of the world, because that was what initially pulled me out, was because I just didn't understand what the, like, the quote-unquote magic powers of his fucking... Yeah. Japanese lute or whatever the instrument is that he plays. I don't know the name of it. There is like a specific Japanese name, I'm sure. But his instrument that he plays, and he has some like magical power to create these origami characters that fight and interact, which seems like such an amazing thing. But everyone just kind of like nonchalantly just goes, yeah, whatever. This is just a normal thing that everyone just watches in the town square. Like, I mean, they're kind of impressed, but it's not like amazing. But, like, it's kind of fucking amazing, and I don't really understand, like, what this instrument... Like, I agree with you, it kind of doesn't clarify it by the end, and I guess that's my problem overall, was what the fuck does that instrument do, and what can it do and what can't it do, and what are the rules, the magical rules of this world, is what I was never clarified. But I guess I agree with you in the sense... The second half didn't clarify that, but overall I felt like I had other questions. Like, there was a lot of little things that were sort of dropped in the first half, like don't go out at night and all this other stuff that I was kind of like, well, fucking why? And then why did they find, and then you find out by the end of the film, like the logic kind of ties that up in a nice little bow. Like the granddad is literally the moon and he can't be seen by the moon. That's why the sisters found her and found him and all this thing. So like, as that kind of stuff was revealed, like the nitpicks I had with the beginning of the film slowly started to like dissolve. I agree with you in terms of the magic, because I feel like that is a problem from the beginning that is never quite, at least for me, satisfactorily explained, like what the logic is for that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that we have opposite views of where it becomes a problem, sort of. Because at the start I liked that I didn't know, and I was discovering this, and it was a bit mysterious.
Did you not find the reactions from the town folk, like, maybe because you're not a surrogate, like that you're so outside what everyone else is experiencing? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I assume like the they all know who he is, and you know, he's been there since he was a baby, and that at first they probably were incredibly amazed, and they're still amazed, but it's like, you know, that's just what he does now.
But then why is he like a beggar? Like, why is he this like poor little child that they should be like,
I don't know. I guess like, everyone in the village is kind of poor, you know, they're all a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like simple. Really dig into a nitpick, but I just felt like it was set up like he was this like poor little orphan and hung out with this like old woman, and he was like desperate for money and all this stuff, and then as soon as he like strums his little instrument. Like, the whole fucking town, like, just, like, gathered, like... Yeah. I mean, the logic between those two things never... Like, I couldn't quite figure it out. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It just seemed a bit... Yeah. Didn't really work. But, anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can understand that. Yeah, well, yeah, it didn't... That stuff didn't bother me too much, and I liked all of the, you know, don't... You can't go out at night time, and... it's just, like, this... As I said, this sort of mystery and this world building that I don't know, it just captivated me really early on and drew me in. And some of it does pay off really nicely and some of it doesn't. But yeah, I don't know. I always get really into that, into world building of in a film like this, where you've got this sort of mythological stuff happening. And I often prefer that than usually an end where it's paying off. Even when in things like Lord of the Rings or something like that, I love reading it and the movies. Like, Fellowship is by far my favorite because it's like everyone's meeting and you're like figuring out where things are and what things mean. And then once you know, it's like, okay, now we can have action and we can have resolve. But I like that sort of discovery. And I thought this movie did that well to begin with. But yeah, I don't know. I really love this movie a lot, but I feel like I'm about to talk about stuff that didn't work. And
that's funny, cause I'm the opposite. I'm just getting my not working out of the way because I, it's weird. You should say that again, because I 100% agree. And like, back to your Lord of the Rings example, Fellowship of the Rings, probably my favorite as well. And I totally agree about world building being like one of the most important things, but I think that's what tripped me up, because I just didn't believe part of the world, or like it didn't feel like good world building to me, because the logic wasn't gelling 100%. It wasn't terrible, like a lot of it was working, and like the stuff with the mum in the cave was awesome, and you know, it wasn't like I was sitting there with my arms crossed going like, fuck this film, it doesn't make any sense. There was just like parts of it that I was like, what? Like, I wasn't quite understanding, and not in a good mysterious way, in a way that like it didn't seem to make sense to me. But like I said, as it went on, a lot of those questions were kind of answered, which is kind of counterintuitive. Like, it kind of retroactively, it makes me appreciate the world building, but at the time I was a little bit resistant to it and thinking it was like taking some shortcuts and just like spouting fantasy mythological stuff for no purpose, until I realized that there was a bigger end game, which typically it works the other way around. I agree, like I usually prefer it the other way, but as I've got that off my chest, what is it that you didn't like so much about the film, John?
I just think as it went on, I think it got, as I said, there were too many, one or two or three too many people explaining their backstories as they were doing something. Like, they obviously had this whole storyline and this whole mythology that they wanted to fit into the movie. And I just feel like every time the creepy aunties showed up, which their reveal is truly terrifying.
Pretty creepy, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like legitimately creeped out by that. But every time they're fighting, they're talking about their father or when they were young sisters and stuff. And I just felt that after a while. I was like, even at the last fight, the same thing is happening again. And it just wore me down a little bit. The grandfather does the same thing. So there's a bit too much of that. And the other thing was, I was disappointed and confused with the mother being the monkey and the dad being the beetle. I just thought they were such good surrogates for those figures anyway. Like, they represented the mother.
It needs to be literally that.
Like, and when he's sitting on the boat and he's like, oh, I've never sat with two people like this before, or two adults like this. That's a very good point. I was like, oh, this is really cool. He's sort of got his parents through this, you know, and they vaguely kind of look like them in some ways. Obviously, that turns out to be because it is them. I like that. And I don't think that actually added anything to it. I think that took away that it was literally them. And also that's where the magic, at least on the mum's side, doesn't make any sense to me. Like, so she put herself into the
monkey, I think it just gets a bit hard to figure out. 100% agree. And that's, weirdly, I guess, like, I had a massive problem with the monkey being the mother. I 100% agree. And, like, because, what the fuck did she do? She stopped the sisters and then just, with that, you know, magic lightning bolt or whatever, you know, the force field, and then just, at the same time,
She did, like,
a toy turn into a monkey and put herself in the monkey and then,
It's but she was mental. Still moving when he flew off, it's so she left enough of herself ridiculous. Down there to...
I agree. And it pissed me off when that reveal came. I was like, that's dumb and stupid. And then, like, similarly, why the fuck was she acting like such a dickhead to him and not just saying, I'm your mother? That. Like, But, I mean, that was explained a little bit because she knew it was, like, temporary and she didn't want him to think that he... And I was like, fine. And then... I had the opposite reaction to the beetle because once I never even thought of that was going to be the father. And when that was revealed as the father, then it kind of clicked for me in like a, I don't know, like a metaphorical thing because it was all about family and it stopped being about the literal magical shit because it was about him literally reconnecting with his mother because he never kind of did because she was like, comatose for the whole time and then the father that was dead and it's about him experiencing family for this short period of time and I kind of saw it more as a parable than as a literal like story and that I guess that's kind of like going back to what I was saying before how it like worked for me the further it went on because stuff like that started to happen and I sort of my brain changed gears and clicked into a different mode and I was like okay I should stop thinking about why the specifics of these magics work or don't work. Like, this is about a boy and his mum and his dad. Like, literally, that's what the whole thing ends up being about, you know?
Yeah.
But I agree with what you... Like, it is a bit clunky, the way it's handled. They probably could have done that better.
I totally agree with you. I think the movie in general, and maybe this goes back to why the first half worked for me is that it feels like this old fable or this old story that's been passed down or something, you know? And that's why you can have these sort of leaps of faith and amazing things happening and no one sort of questions it or whatever, because it's almost like, it reminded me a little bit of Princess Kaguya in a small way, in that it feels very sort of, it's another time, another place that's not quite on Earth, even though it feels very similar. You know what I mean? But yeah, in the moment, that stuff is hard to deal with. And I still do think, even with all that great thematic stuff, that they didn't need to be his actual parents. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like it's... Yeah, I don't know. But no. that is a nitpick in a way, but it did bother me.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I that never even entered my mind because once the bug tended to be the dad, I literally took it as literally the family. But I see what you mean, and I think that would almost be as powerful, if not more, if they were like stand-ins.
Yeah, it's like, well, they are. Like, you know that they are, but you don't have to literally say it. And especially if they don't survive, which they don't, you know, and then at the end he has...
he has to deal with the death of his dad, his mum, and the monkey and the beetle.
Well, the thing is they're the same at the end, and then you see the spirits at the very end in that last shot. And then you click even further. If in my version of the movie, you click even further than that, it's not four deaths, it's just two. It's just the mom and the dad and
it's him
coming to terms with that.
That's a very good point, and I think that would have made it a better film. I agree. But having said that, and like jumping back on the broader arcs of the film, I did also love the whole sort of storytelling aspect of it, and like how it sort of drilled into the importance of telling a story and what stories mean, absolutely. And like the truth behind stories, and the literal truth and the inherent truth, and like the ending and how he defeats his grandfather, and then they kind of like retell his story in a completely different light to like make him a different person. And I don't know, that was like way more complex than I ever expected from a film like this. I was really impressed.
Yeah, can you imagine that in any of these other kind of CG movies?
No way.
Like, there is a battle, but really the climax is like, you're a nice old man. Yeah, you're very friendly. That's the end.
it's such an anti-climax in a traditional sense. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it is very Japanese, I think. Ooh. And you know, quite often I was thinking of Ghibli films and stuff when I was watching this, because, you know, the action and the adventure had a Western slant to it, and actually felt very video gamey in a good way. But the philosophy is very Eastern and very Japanese, I think. And I love that mixture of the two cultures.
Yeah. And like, just sort of swinging back to one of your criticisms in terms of specifically with the sisters and how a lot of the battle scenes involved a lot of exposition and like retelling the stories of how they grew up and stuff. And while I agree, there is a lot of that. You can't deny that, but I think at least it's in service of a theme. Do you know what I mean? Like the point is all about storytelling and way they see each other, like the way he sees his mother, and then the way we see it from the sister's point of view, and the grandfather, like it, the way everything changes, depending on whose story you're listening to. I agree it's exposition heavy and maybe a bit clunky, but I much prefer that. At least that's what it's all. The film is almost about that, so I give it a pass.
Absolutely,
you know.
Oh yeah. I totally agree, and I think something that we've kind of say a lot on the podcast when we like something, that even if it's clunky, is that its heart is in the right place, and they knew what they were doing, and maybe the very technical specifics of it stumble a bit, but that through line of what they're trying to say and what they're trying to represent is consistent and always there. And I love that. And it's a great message. Like this movie is such a different message for kids as well, which often we get, just believe in yourself and be positive and all that stuff. And, that's all good. But this is like more, way more philosophical and about life in general and about your family and people that die in your family and how you remember them and how you live on and how you deal with that. And it's just a great, kids need to see that stuff as well.
Definitely. I 100% agree. Yeah.
You can't shield them from that sort of thing. And it's not confronting in a bad way at all. I loved all of that stuff. And just, on that note, quickly, my cinema wasn't very full, but there were a lot of kids in it. And when I say a lot, like six kids or something, it was not heaps. But I was kind of worried like they'd get a bit restless, just because like they pace their films quite slowly a lot of the time, and
it's not like ADD like fucking Minions or whatever,
and not at all, but they never got restless or fidgety, and they all paid attention the whole time, and I assumed that they were engaged then, and it was nice to see that.
We can cut this out, but there was that hilarious moment in our screening, because it was like a packed preview screening at the BFI, and right at the end, we're doing that final battle with the two sisters, where one of them, or maybe it's one at that point, I don't know, where she gets her like mask smashed, and it's like pretty fucking full on, and one of, like, I think it might be when the monkey gets done, or like she gets stabbed or some shit. I don't know. There's like the big fight happens, and there's like a really like fucked up thing happens, and there's a quiet moment, and then like from way over in one of the corners of the cinema, there was this tiny little like girl's voice, and she's like, "I hate this movie." And like the whole cinema just erupted in laughter. Like it was like such, I mean, I don't think it was, you know, she was obviously saying she was quite freaked out by what was happening on the film, on the screen. Not that she actually didn't like the film, but it was like, she, it was always because she liked it, she didn't want to see the monkey get hurt or whatever.
Yeah,
she was perhaps
exactly,
a little too young, but it was just an amazing like eruption. It probably ruined quite a good emotional moment in the film, but it was fucking hilarious.
That is really funny.
Though, I mean, coming back to actual podcast material, hearing you say that the cinema is quite empty, it is very disappointing to hear that this film is like bombing at the box office, which is like breaks my heart, man. Seriously,
yeah, legitimately, yeah, it's really sad. There's just not a space for this in the current climate. And actually, thank you for saying that, because that's another point that when I was watching it, it made me dislike Finding Dory even more, because I was like, you know, this is what you should be doing, Pixar. They do still every now and then, you know, Inside Out, another example, but of a good Pixar film. But it's just so fresh, you know, and taking a chance, and you know, they don't have, I don't know the figures, they would have less than half of the money that Pixar have. Wait, like a quarter of the money.
Even less,
you know,
keep going.
Less than that.
Yeah.
But they're taking a fucking chance, you know, and following their artistic instincts and not listening to market trends and shit like that. I mean, I'm sure that factors in a little bit, but overall, that, you know, and I just want them to be rewarded. And it's also not like they're doing something so crazy out there oh, well, no wonder it's not making money. Like, all of their movies are friendly enough or approachable enough that they should be at least making their money back and then making a bit more, and people should be seeing them. But, you know, we've been conditioned by marketing and advertising to have this glossy CG, brightly colored stuff. And when something like this, particularly Kubo, which is a bit darker and, you know, might look a bit foreign in a way to people, they just don't go out to see it, and they're really missing out. And I don't know how you fix that problem, really. It's, you know, it almost needs to start in the home on Netflix or something, where you have Leica make a show for the Netflix, and so people get accustomed again to seeing this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I don't know, because I hate that idea too, though, because that like pushes it into the small screen realm, and then it's like I don't know. I honestly don't know, man. Like, I feel like the companies like Pixar should have a responsibility to like bankroll companies like Leica. Like, I feel like Pixar used to be that before they were bought out by Disney and became this like behemoth corporate thing. Like, they were this small little creative company that were doing something a bit of left of field.
Yeah.
Really
and
passionate.
And they had that. Yeah. Yes, exactly. They had that passion for being true to their visions and stuff, their creative instincts.
And different in their day. Like, they went out on a fucking limb, like, with Toy Story and stuff, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, and obviously CG caught on massively. But, you know, Leica are doing the same thing. They're just, like, stuck in early Pixar mode, you know? Which is a good thing.
Exactly.
It's a way of animation that is different, but it's just never going to.
If you could, you could choose, would you, like, disband Pixar and keep Leica, or would you let Leica crumble and keep Pixar?
Fuck.
That's like
I
an
don't know,
impossible
because,
question, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. you know, we say all this stuff about Pixar, but they still have those diamonds.
And they deliver Inside Out, which is what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
Which I think is a better film than Kubo.
It is.
If you objectively look at it. I feel like Inside Out is a masterpiece and Kubo is a flawed, beautiful piece of art.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I agree. That's exactly how I feel.
Do you know what? I reckon I would fuck Pixar off and I'd keep like... I think Pixar has enough back catalogue and they've almost hit their peak and they're like troughing out into sequels now, and I'd prefer to see what Laika has to offer. And if I had to choose between CGI, if I boiled it down to technical, you know, it was CGI and stop motion, I'd choose stop motion over CGI any fucking day of the week. Bigger than that, like, they have billions of dollars now, Disney. Like, they should be... I mean, we've talked about this before, and John Lasseter's fucking bullshit limptic claim that he was going to, like, keep hand-drawn animation alive.
That's the same thing.
It's disgraceful that never happened.
Yeah, it is. And you're right, and I think about this a lot. They have so much money, and it just shows you how they're driven by the dollar... down to the every cent, right? Because they do, I think, have a responsibility to keep hand-drawn animation alive, because that's what the company is. That's what it started on, and it's an art form.
Well, to be clear, we're talking about Disney, not Pixar. Like
Disney. I mean, we're going off. I won't go on. But it annoys me. 100%
agree.
It's like spend. You know, however much it makes, you know, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but whatever it is, $75 million to make a hand-drawn feature or something. I don't know how much they cost, something like that, or maybe $100 million. But you can afford it. You can. Don't tell me you can't.
Yeah, that's like 10% of what
every
Funny
years.
Dory's just made at the box office.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't have to be all the time, but every 3 years we get a hand-drawn thing, like... the goodwill towards you and the art that you will get out of it is just so much
better.
Exactly
right. Like, they shouldn't give a fuck about box office performance. They should do their Finding Dory's and their fucking Cars 7 to keep themselves afloat. Yeah. And then...
Yeah, and all the Marvel shit, Star Wars, like, that's making so much money. Like, have little creative
things
of that.
Like, alternate between, like... hand-drawn and stop-motion every second year. Let it tank, but just, like, push it in people. Like, keep it alive. Yeah. Like, don't let it this, like, heritage crumble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it seemed like Lasseter was going to do that, as you said. When he went in, he said that all that.
Shit the bed, didn't he?
He's like, I'm going to bring it back. Oh, no, I'm not. That was it.
What did he do? Like, one short film in front of a Pixar... film, and then that was it. That was his legacy.
I don't know if the Princess and the Frog was his.
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like that was before, but I could be wrong.
I'm not sure. He might have been there, but it's such a shame. Anyway,
so I remember they brought back that like the Mickey logo, you know, where he's like, doo-doo-doo, like it's the old like 20s Mickey.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, cool. Yeah, they're really doing it. You know.
Then he was like, Cars 12.
Yeah. Yeah, we remember our heritage by just playing that at the start of our CG movies.
I just want to release this rant as its own podcast. Okay, well, like, despite our, like, random rant we just went on about Pixar, I think bringing it back to Kubo, this is a great film that people should see, and I'm glad we're doing a podcast on it because hopefully this will spur people. I mean, we've kind of spoiled it for you. Hopefully you've fucking seen it before you listen to this, but I don't know. I want to be a voice of positivity for this film because it is a really unique, original, fun, well-made, you know, film. And on top of that, it's stop motion is an art that you rarely see, let alone on a big screen. Like, it's just... disappearing. So I don't know. I want to urge people to see this, and if you're listening to this and you've seen it, tell people to see this film because it's good. It's good film. It might have some flaws, but it's good. And thanks for listening to the pre-post film review. We'd love to hear what you guys thought of Kubo and the Two Strings. We want to hear from people that have seen the film. Apparently no one is seeing the film, so if you've seen it, email us and let us know what you think. We hope you loved it. I'm sure you loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we also want to hear from people who didn't like it as well. Either way, email us.
Yeah, maybe.
You can email us at prepostfilmreview@gmail.com and we reply to all our emails, so it'd be awesome to hear from you if you feel so inclined.
Yeah, that's right. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter we're at prepostfr, and it's just a good way to keep up to date with the show. The links are in the show notes as always. We're obviously also on iTunes and Stitcher and all that stuff, and if you could subscribe to us on one of those, particularly iTunes, I don't know why I said it like that, but you know,
I agree.
That would be great, and you can leave a review there or give us a star rating.
That'd be cool.
Even if you just write a review and just write iTunes like that, if you can figure out a way of writing it so that it sounds like that, that'd be cool. But you know, that's just another way to help support
the
show.
That'd be great. And we are also on Letterboxd, so there again are links to our pages on the show notes for this show. It's a cool little film community, and you can sort of check out what John and I have been watching outside of the podcast, and get in contact with us there if you feel like it. Thanks again for listening. See you next episode. Yeah, boy. And like he says, better than Finding Dory, which is like the biggest film of the year so far,
which is
crazy.
It's so much better.
Yeah.
It just annoys me. Yeah.
That's it. That'll be the end. We'll end it right there.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm happy with that.